by chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you say it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Grass may dab in the middle of it. Grass may dab in the middle. We are grass may dab.
Secret truth. Through forgiveness, we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. And this first hour is going to consist, I'm going to be making a few comments and expressing a few opinions here during this first hour. And then the last half of this first hour, we're going to play President Trump's speech at Liberty University, which took place today, May 13, 2017, in Lynchburg, Virginia, at Liberty University. And Jerry Falwell's son introduced him and bestowed upon President Trump an honorary doctorate of business. And I don't know if that was a surprise to the president or what, but he graciously accepted it. And then he gave this speech of about 38 minutes. He was well received. They were wearing these MAGA hats out there, several of the graduates. It was a commencement speech at the commencement exercises of Liberty University. And it was a very, very good speech. Trump seems to be becoming more statesmanlike, more presidential-like as time goes on. He's coming out of corporate structure, command structure, and he's trying his best now to wrestle control of the old office in a statesmanlike manner. It's not easy for him to come from, say, the Trump Tower, which is a Trump corporate-type structure, then adjust into the Oval Office with all those pressures and so forth that confront you there. So it's going to be interesting from now on. And also, he seems to be turning his back a little bit on this neocon type of influence. I believe initially he selected or was influenced or recommended too many authoritarian neocon types of people around him that he appointed. So I think that needs to be rectified, and he's got to not get these CFR people in there, people that have been institutionalized for years, and they're a big setup, you know, group. And being a setup group, you know, they've been, like I said just a few words ago, they've been institutionalized, see. And becoming institutionalized is not going to help us in furthering this the understanding, I guess we should say, of this this rising new world order that is taking hold. See, when we say rising new world order, what do we mean by that? Well, it's a gigantic, you know what I mean, awesome system. And it's been built into our education system through the schools of journalism. They teach them there to go for the truth and all that. When they get out on the job, they quickly learn that you're going to lose your income and your job and your salary if you go too far past a certain point. So they stay in line. So they become regimented to the system, and the system thus controls them. And that's what's been going on for years in this whole system. Now, the same thing is true in our whole structure, whether you're talking about any job or in corporate, private, you know what I mean, business, or you're talking about government business. We've had a gigantic system of colleges and universities rise up and built and structured and so forth, but much of the curriculum had come standardized. and in becoming standardized, then you've got it's being repeated over and over again. You're not going to get any new and innovative types of comments or creativeness. I'll say that you're not going to have the creative inputs and so forth, because the curriculum is laid out in school. The science is laid out in school. If you don't conform or you start rebelling against some of these teachings, then you're uncooperative, or you're anti-government, or you're not going to get the grades you need to get out of school and get that J-O-B. See? And so everybody's got to go out there and get and strive to get that job out there. See? That's what's all important, is to go out and get that job and then go to work, you know what I mean? And so that's basically what is happening. Now, the second half of this first hour will be President Trump speaking. And now, coming up at the end of this introductory commentary will be Keith Olbermann, and he's going to make some statements about the president. And then he's going to say that he's calling on all of these different entities and so forth out there to help rein in the president and try to, you know, keep him from taking us to a fascist state. But the very people that are controlling the Keith Olbermanns in the world are the real fascists. And they helped bring the Nazis out of post-Nazi Germany, along with the Catholic Church. And these are the people we have to fear, see. And so what we need to do is take note and begin to come out of this very, very delusional state that we have been conditioned into by all these institutions that I just spoke about. And in trying to come out of these institutions, then we can form a more enlightened, more truthful, more realistic view of reality. So in just a few moments here, we're going to be going to this Keith Olbermann, about 7-8 minutes long. And then we'll listen to it and see what you think about it, okay? But thank you for listening. We certainly appreciate all the support and attention you've given us. Bye-bye.
I'm Keith Olbermann, and this is The Resistance. I appeal to the intelligence agencies and the governments of what is left of the free world, to them as entities, entireties, as bureaucracies making official decisions, and to the individuals who make decisions of conscience, to GCHQ and MI6 in the UK, to the BND in Germany, the DGSE in France, the ASIS in Australia, and even to the GRU in Russia, where they must already be profoundly aware that they have not merely helped put an amoral cynic in power here, but an uncontrollable one, whose madness is genuine and whose usefulness, even to them, is at an end. To all of them and to the world's journalists, I make this plea. We, the citizens of the United States of America, are the victims of a coup. We need your leaks, your information, your intelligence, your recordings, your videos, your conscience. The civilian government and the military of the United States are no longer in the hands of the people, nor in the control of any responsible individuals on whom you can rely. The first step towards compromising our FBI occurred Tuesday with the unilateral firing of its director by the president, prompted by the attorney general, both of whom are, or were at least in theory possibly to be, under investigation by the FBI as led by that director they fired. Our CIA is run by one of that president's political appointees. The first national security advisor was fired and may have been a Russian stooge. The second national security advisor has reportedly been yelled at by the president because he had the temerity to disagree with him. Our State Department is in the hands of useless amateurs. Our United Nations mission is bereft of power and uninformed. And the White House is run by a cabal of an amoral family syndicate that has spent its first 3 months slapping a dollar sign on anything that stood still long enough. A cabal with, at its head, a man with seemingly no interest in our laws, in our rights, in our Constitution, and with a brain that appears to not work properly. Through our own negligence, the resentments and stupidities of millions of us, and the boundless greed of our elite class, our democracy has all but slipped away from us. It hangs today by a thread, and those who could protect it and restore it and fight for it, even at this late date, the Republican politicians whose voices today could force Trump out of office tomorrow, they are almost silent, owned by special interests and silenced by a power that exceeds even whatever dedication to freedom they once had. All but a few of them fall back into platitudes about the leader of the country firing the head of the FBI and precipitating a constitutional crisis in order to shut down the investigation of his possible high crimes and misdemeanors. Our majority party impotently wrings its hands about timing and how troubled they are, and then they go back to calculating how they will most easily get reelected, with whose money, by whose instructions. We, the citizens of the United States of America, are victims of a coup. For months, we have heard that your organizations have damning evidence against Donald John Trump. Whatever evidence you may have, you cannot conceal it any longer. Whatever we in this country are to you now, wherever you are now, you know that this nation has been a savior to you at some point in the past, and that our stability and our freedom and a government controlling this country that is at least sane is your surest guarantee of a prosperous future. Indeed, perhaps your surest guarantee of any future at all. Now we need your help. Whatever there is on Trump, reveal it. Issue it officially if you can, leak it if you cannot. If your directors and your governments want you to wait, look to the last days here and ask yourselves, plumb your consciences, if there is any time left to wait. Give it to a reporter. Give it to an American friend. Put it on the internet. Leave it outside somebody's back door. There is no time left for protocols and estimations of long-term impacts and tradecraft. A dictator in training has betrayed our Constitution and nevertheless survived two nights in office. The dictatorship he may want, the dictatorship he may feel is the natural extension of his past life, the dictatorship he may believe he has earned, has gone in this week from crawling to taking its first few tentative steps. What you have, we need, and we need it now. And to the intelligence community of this country, your patriotic duty is clear. In many respects, in the months since the election, you have provided your greatest service in our history. A democracy that has lost its political way, staggers down the street like a drunk, and lurches towards the gutter, yet you have walked a virtually bipartisan straight line. And you have followed your rules, and you have followed the rules of the civilians. And yet, the evildoers still exist regardless. The greatest threat to the freedoms of this nation, that this nation has ever faced, the Trump administration, the Trump junta, is playing by no rules. They just offed the FBI director and let him find out about it by reading a TV news crawl in the back of the room in which he was addressing his Los Angeles office. They have no rules. For now, the rest of us who only want our democracy back, we can have no rules either. We will take the risk of reestablishing the rules later on. What you in the FBI, in the CIA, in the Justice Department have on Trump, we also need now. Because by tomorrow, it may disappear, and your ability to do anything with it may disappear as well. Some of us here on the outside have tried the best we could to prevent this day, others less so. Right now it doesn't matter who did much when. You and the FBI, CIA, the other intelligence agencies, the Justice Department, you must be the patriots now. You and the Five Eyes, in the PSIA in Japan, in the outfits around the world, too secret to have their names known to us, you must become, for the moment, Americans. We need what you have, and we need it now, and we need it made public. It is more than just the fate of this sloppy but well-meaning country that is at risk. For all of our faults, for good or bad, we cannot be left as a fascist rogue state and an enemy of freedom and international comity. The fate of all freedoms may rest in your hands and your willingness to not merely hint, but show what you know. If we go under, you are next. The freedom you save will be your own. Resist. Peace.
it's hard to fathom some of what's going on in today's world. That was Keith Olbermann, and I mean, it's seditious. It's a sedition. I mean, when you're calling on Russian intelligence agencies to undermine the presidency of the United States, this has gone way too far. I really don't know what's going to happen in this country in the future, because it's gotten so convoluted and out of control. The Nazis were helped, and they were helped by the Catholic Church and the higher ups in this country to escape out of post-Nazi Germany and they into safe places and sanctuaries in South America, and then some were brought into this country to work on psychological and market types of programs. The psychology departments, they put them in there. They gave them different names, different, you know, identities and so forth. So the top New World Order, the top order in the world, the Nazis, and furthered their existence and survival after World War II. Now, they're the ones that are playing the liberal left for fools. The top people in the world, okay, the Bilderberg Group is one of the top groups, are marshaling the liberal left in this country and directing them at Trump and calling him a thief. But the group that is doing this are the Nazi, post-Nazis, whatever. These top people in this world actually worked of bringing those people to the country and to South America, and so to form it, you know, a new world order behind the scenes. And so the new world order has characteristics of the Nazi regime, and that's why the new world order has characteristics that are reminiscent of many of the things that the New World Order is guilty of. And it's fascist in the sense that there have been Nazis have post World War II funded up to 750 major international corporations or national corporations at the time. So that we're seeing that these were used to even increase their business, you know what I mean, dominance. And so that has not gone away, see. And so what we're seeing now is we're seeing a system of rule through money power. You had the early banking systems coming in from Europe that dominated the Bank of England, and eventually they took over and founded the Federal Reserve, which is the central bank in this country, the United States. And through that takeover and that dominance of money power, they've been able to extend their control. And this is what we're up against. We're up against a money power from the City of London, which is the financial 1.1 square miles embedded within the greater London area. So they have not gone away. They've gotten, but what is really interesting and very, you know what I mean, concerning, I would say, I guess we are right now, is that the world has a lot of debt. This country has women that can service or be served. Are going to service this debt with interest. We can't continue this. So we're going into a state of decline because of that. You know, President Trump is trying to go out and invigorate the business sector. This is not going to have effect or come to fruition for a while. But we have to try to hold on to the jobs and create new manufacturing jobs within this country that save this to a great extent. And I just think right now that this civil war that's being fomented by the new world order, this new world order, they're internationalist and they're globalist, and they don't mean us any good at all. They're trying to take down the country, and they're trying to transform this country. So the transforming of America into something that it was never intended to be is still taking place. And that's the real danger that we have out here. So what we must do is we must try to awaken the public at large to this transformation process that is ongoing. And it's not always easy to do that in the sense that we try to broadcast here the last 10-plus years to try to tell people how dangerous the times are becoming. But we can't always impress upon them the real significance of how dangerous it is becoming, and especially survival of this country along the lines of its original principles, founding principles. We have millennials that are coming up to me and saying, "What a bunch of old white men that wrote that." But that doesn't mean that what they say is bad and not a good way to govern people. And that's what was founded that is very good. The founding principles and the construction of our government originally is a very, very good system to govern men and voting rights through a democratic process, also through the Bill of Rights, protect their individual freedoms and liberties. And this is what we set up, what those old white guys did, see. But they're the still saving grace. We still have a Bill of Rights that is still operating barely. It's not been as, you know, such a safety net as it has in the past and right now because of all these homeland security laws, which are unconstitutional. They've created a situation where it just can't happen. You know what I mean? We're not going to be able to do anything this weekend. We just, you know, this is just too dangerous a situation to ignore the problems that we are going to be facing. And I mean, I almost cry about this at times, you know, because we were on here over 10.5 years, Charlotte Littlefield Brown and myself, and it's like hitting your head up against a brick wall at times. And people think we're conspiracy nuts or something like that. And we try to bring out truth about different events. And they'll just dismiss us with just a little verbiage or a little description. All conspiracy. And they can't believe that, you know. But the reason why, and I was talking to Ole Domegaard last week. And he's going to be up and coming on this second hour, by the way. So Ole Domegaard's coming in live from Spain with me. We're going to talk about a lot of really interesting and very serious-minded subjects. And we're going to be talking about all flags and stuff. He's been able to hear some of that. Don't miss that partly. But what close this tonight here is President Trump's speech at the University. I know some people are saying that Trump's letting them down. And some of the people on the right said that. And I felt a little bit let down too at times. He, our president, a great number of people voted to put him in and have faith in him still. He's attracting large crowds, some of his strongest, where he was elected from the strongest. He has a very Christian right, a conservative right that is supportive of him. And I think we should respect all that. I think he must step up to plate though, and when we feel like he's too much neocon interference and influence, we've got to stand up there and say, "Mr. President Trump, he's doctor now, so he has a doctorate in front of that." But I guess you'd say, "President Trump, we feel you're doing the right thing here. We feel that your attack was right. It was too quickly unleashed. There should have been more forethought, I should say, before any future attack would take place." And I think that's where he's very impulsive. Now he's saying he wants to replace the FBI director very quickly. Well, President Trump, let's just hold your horses a little bit there. Let's hold your horse and look at all of the candidates. And let's don't pick one of those neocon police state type of individuals that I think you've got too many in your administration already. Too many authoritarian personalities running around the White House already. Now, let's don't get little people in there like just, you know, like your son-in-law. That's been a big mistake. But you need to put in there a little older people that have had 35, 45, 50 years, if you find them, of experience in gut, in foreign affairs. And don't get them in there. They're no good. They've just been just to fall that foreign relations to support the neocon, something akin. So instead of letting be impulsive about these moments, it takes more thought. I know you want to you want to do things very quick in the president's Oval Office there, or the office of the presidency, different than your corporate position was. It takes a little bit more time to make these a little forethought, a little bit more advice from older people. And if they're counsel on foreign relations and all that, don't bring them in there. Leave them out. You need to find them there. They're not controlled by these kinds of their institution. They've been institutionalized in this foreign affairs stuff. I think on the campaign trail, and I listened to many of your speeches, you seem to want to pull back from some of these foreign adventures, and I think that's exactly where you should head. Instead of continuing this policy of Obama and before George W. Bush, that played right in the hands of the neocons. Trump, you need to step back a little bit. You need to pull our troops out. Afghanistan, leave. Don't stay there. We don't need to be in Afghanistan at all. You're playing directly into the neocons and to the New World Order by being there. And we've lost some very, very fine sons of very fine families over in Afghanistan where we shouldn't even been there to start with. Next thing about the son of bin Laden is going to take revenge. See, that's all propaganda being put up. So to our listening audience in there, don't go this propaganda anymore. And I believe with all the different alternative media out there, I think the audience, a certain portion of them, and I think the audience out there that voted for Trump, they began to be awakened, crossed over, and they did that because the lost money on Hillary. And they said to themselves, what is this big money black and those are supporting Hillary? We just can't support her cause then. We've got to go over to Trump because evidently they don't win there. So we're going to vote for President Trump at that time, because the big money, the big New World Order, the Hillary people, they're against Trump. Now they haven't let this open thing that you just heard. It's seditious. It is not loyalty to this country. And I don't care, in our listening audience, what you think about Trump. So far, this is going too far, Keith Olbermann. That is way, way too far. It's seditious in nature and proclamations that you're made there. And it is not what is good for this country. It is further creating a civil war in this country between the left and the right. And is not healing anyone at all. So I can't say anything, more than that, because that's probably going pretty far. But I think some people would agree with me about the seditious nature of your comments. And then call on Russian intelligence to participate and give us information. This is totally outrageous. There's no sense in that. That's totally, on the edge of instability of some kind. That's not good thinking. That's not being loyal to this country. That's not supporting a president that was fairly elected. The Russian thing is not a legitimate attack on Trump. Whatever happened there did not affect the election. I think everyone is getting to say that. We'll have the full report in on that of it. But this was created by Podesta and that a couple of days after as against Trump. There's not substance. I think General Flynn has received money. He's disclosed. That's another issue, but that. And Flynn is no longer, in the administration. So we've got to try to come together. The liberal left is being hustled by the people that brought the Nazi here. Liberal left, that's what happened. We've got to look at the Fabian Society and all of the big money. Anthony Sutton wrote a book about Wall Street back in the Bolshevik Revolution, and it was true. The big money has been bringing about a world communist state that can more easily be controlled. They're using the liberal left in the country to attack Trump to do that. So you've got to stop this insurrection and at least calm down and start trying to wake up to how you're being used and how you've been propagandized to help destroy the country. And the liberal left is exactly being done. It's an emotional thing, see. They get you riled up through hate and resentment and so forth. That is destructive for this country, and we're not going to repair the problems with that kind of going on. But okay, now coming up next is President Trump at the Liberty University today, May 13th, 2017. Thank you for listening, and enjoy the rest of this. And of course, we'll with our bumper music on the way out. But thank you very much for listening, and thank you for support out there. God bless you.
Please welcome to Liberty University for the first time, Dr. Donald Trump.
Thank you. Wow. What a place. What a place. You know, Jerry took my speech, but I said, we don't really need that stuff anyway. This is an amazing school. It's an amazing university. And I'll tell you something, all over the world they're talking about it, Liberty University, what they've done, and in such a short time. So you can be very, very proud of yourself and your leaders. Amazing job. You know, your founder, Jerry Farwell, was a great man. And I was saying before that I met him on a number of occasions. So impressive, so smart, so tough when you had to be tough, but a man with a big, beautiful heart, tremendous heart. And I have to tell you that Chancellor Jerry Farwell Jr. is an incredible guy. Now, I am in the real estate business. A lot of you don't know this, but for about 20 years, Jerry Falwell Jr. was in Central Virginia as a real estate developer. A friend of mine from the area said, man, was he tough and smart and good. Do you believe this? And now look what he's doing. So it all sort of works. But he was a tough, smart guy. And I want to just tell you, I'm glad he sort of left the real estate business because Trump would be a distant number two. I can tell you that. It's true. You know, when I got a call from Liberty, I said, you know, I was confirmed at First Presbyterian Church, Jamaica, Queens. You don't know where Queens is. It's in New York. First Presbyterian. And I said, do you have that certificate and do you have that picture? Are they going to put it up? Because I actually sent it. But, I was a brat. I was a terrible brat, actually. But, you know, I used to love going to Sunday school. People don't know this about Trump. They think, oh, Trump, you know, Trump. But the truth is, I went to Sunday school. And I loved going to Sunday school. And I did for years. And First Presbyterian Church, which is one of the oldest in the country, was just a great place. And I learned a lot. And I learned about God. And that was probably the greatest thing I've ever learned. Forget all the business stuff. When I was asked to speak, I said, do you want me to speak? You know, these are, in many cases, young people that are going and they want to conquer the world and do well. Or do you want me to talk politics? And they said, well, maybe you talk about success, but you could mention a little bit about politics. Well, let's start by saying that our country is in serious trouble. It's in serious trouble. We have $17 trillion in debt. We have a real unemployment of 21%. Forget the 8.2% nonsense. The real number is 21%. You know, the numbers are such that you can't read them anymore. When you're looking for a job and then you give up, they take you off the unemployed. And your number doesn't show up. So we're anywhere from 16 to 21%. The world is laughing at us. We're like a bunch of patsies. China is taking advantage of us like nobody has ever done before. China, I sold an apartment recently for $53 million in a building in New York. and a great building. All my buildings are great. To a Chinese gentleman who, in all fairness, I'm not knocking Chinese leadership. If you can get away with it, get away with it. But he said, how do we get away with this? He actually is asking me, how do we get away with it? Our leaders don't get it. Let me give you a little example. The Olympics. We wanted to get the Olympics in Chicago. Now, the President of the United States makes a trip to Europe on Air Force One. Trip must have cost probably $10 million if you knew what these planes cost with all the security. He goes there to make the case that the Olympics should come to the United States. This is called amateur hour. He gets an audience and he leaves. So I say to myself, oh, we've got the Olympics, it's done. Because no president of the United States would have ever gone to Europe and made such a big deal unless he got or had a wink and a nod, meaning you come here, you're getting it. Not only didn't we get it, we came in fourth place. Now think of this. This is the way our country is run. We are losing our jobs and our manufacturing to other places. You know, we talk about Apple. Everyone's talking about Apple. And Apple's wonderful. But they don't make their product here. They make it mostly in China. So what are we gaining? You know, we're not gaining. They make the product. Why can't we make computers? Why can't we make cell phones? Why can't we make the iPhone in this country? We should be doing it here. We just seem to have lost our edge. And now we're in a position that unless things take place and take place fast, we are going to be, for many, many years to come, in serious trouble to the point that I don't know that you can really come back. OPEC. Take a look at OPEC. You go to their airports. You see where they live. You see the way they live. Unbelievable. Then you come in to LaGuardia, to Kennedy, to LAX, and it's horrible. It's like a third world country. We're spending money that we don't have. We're borrowing money from China to fight in Libya, so they go out and kill our ambassador and other Americans. And then guess where? China gets a lot of its oil from Libya. We don't get the oil from Libya. China does. And I see that. And I made the statement, and people said, oh, it's so controversial. It's so controversial. We get called by the Libyans. They were being routed, if you remember. They were being routed by Gaddafi. It was over. So the rebels, you know, like Gone with the Wind, the nice romantic term, rebels. Most of them came from Iran, and they were fighting us in Iraq. But the rebels convinced us to spend billions of dollars on helping them. Now, when they come, just like the Olympic story, what president would do that unless you know you're going to win? Same story here. They come, they're about over, it's 2 days from the end, and they say, we need help. Now, if Jerry were in this position, if I were in this position, or if somebody that had some brain power, we're in the position. And some people disagree with this, and I don't know, maybe you people will disagree. I would have said very simply, we will help you, but we want 50% of your oil. And they would have said, absolutely. And the only reason I wouldn't have asked for 75% is because I want to be a nice person, okay? Like you. And they would have said, absolutely. Now, if you said it, horrible. Same thing in Iraq. We go into Iraq. You know what? Iran, in order to get to Syria, is flying their planes directly over Iraq because it's a much shorter trip. So Iraq has the second largest oil reserves in the world. We go into Iraq. We spend $1.5 trillion. They hate us, and we get nothing. You know, in the old days, when you had a war, it was to the victor
belong the spoils. Today we get nothing. We go into a war, we decimate a country, and then we come out, and what do? It's horrible. The way this country is being run is horrible. We have such unbelievable potential, such incredible. Now, we could have said at a certain point during the Iraqi war, well, listen, we're going to stay, we're going to help you out a little further, but we want a lot of your oil. We want to pay, at least give us back $1.5 trillion, which sounds like a lot of money. It's peanuts. They have $9 trillion worth of oil. Give us some money back. So it's now the opposite. I heard the other day where an Iraqi, probably potential killer, said, we want the United States to pay for all the destruction they've done to our country. And one of these idiot politicians will probably say, you know what, that's the only fair thing to do. So what we're doing with our country is oblivion. I've said, and Michelle's heard me say it, and I hope she does great in her, it's going to be a tough one, right? She's 2 points up, tough area, but you're going to win. You better win. But I've said that in terms of this country, we don't need OPEC. We have so much oil. You probably, with your luck, Jerry, you probably have it right under here. I don't know if you want to touch it, but you have it right under here. But we have so much oil and so much energy that, in all fairness, 4 years ago, we didn't know existed. Between the natural gas and actual oil, and it's pure, beautiful oil. We don't need OPEC. We should have approved the pipeline from Canada, but we don't need Canada. We don't need anybody. Now, I left New York, and New York is being flooded with presidents from and dictators and everybody. You got some dictators, you got some presidents, some are sort of a combination of both. They call themselves president, but they're actually a dictator. But we got hundreds of them. They're in New York. We have a president that's in New York. You know how many meetings he's going to have? Not one. He's not meeting with one foreign leader. Now, they talk about our country, and they talk about how Barack Obama has done so well in foreign relations and his foreign policy. He's so brilliant. What's everything's terrible. You know, he gets the greatest press of anybody that I think I've ever seen. You talk about Teflon. I've never seen anything like it. I heard somebody saying the other day that he's an expert on foreign policy. He went over to Cairo, Egypt, and made a speech. Mubarak was overthrown, and now they hate us. And we give them billions of dollars. And we continue to give them billions, and they want more money. But they still hate us. It's inconceivable what's going on. So, here's the story. If this country doesn't shape up and shape up quickly, it's going to be very, very hard to recover, number one. Number two, we have an election coming up that outside of the biggies, you know, George Washington, Abraham Lincoln, we had a couple of biggies, right? And maybe more important than them. This is, I think, going to be the most important election that we've ever had. There's never been a time in our country's history where a presidential election was more important. Because our country is going in the wrong direction. Our dollar is being devalued. The world is laughing at us. They think we're stupid. And I see the way Liberty University has been run. I've seen where you came from and how it was a struggle and how brilliant it is right now. Our country has the same potential if we ever wanted to do something about it. As an example, the trillions of dollars that we give on energy, if we took it for ourselves and actually took it, whatever we don't need, we export it, we can take care of our deficits. We can take care of our $16 trillion, which will turn out to be peanuts by comparison to the kind of numbers you're talking about. So the potential is enormous. Hopefully the right things happen in a month and a half, and we get back on track. Because the next subject that we're going to discuss just briefly is success. Do you guys, I see all these handsome young men in the front, and I see all these beautiful young women. Do you guys want to be successful or don't you care? Okay, you better believe it. So let's talk about it, okay? All right? Boy, does he have a... Stand up. Stand up. I love this guy. Stand up. Look at these guys. You have great people. I love them. Because I was no different when I was 20 years old, believe me. I wanted to be successful. I wanted to get out of Brooklyn. I said, Pop, I love you, but I want to get out of Brooklyn. I love Brooklyn, but I want to get out. And I love those buildings. You know, I look from Queens and Brooklyn, and I'd see those big buildings, those big skyscrapers in Manhattan. I said, Pop, that's what I want to do. That's what I wanted to do. And lots of things can happen. I mean, I'll give you one story. About 8 years ago, I was approached by NBC and Mark Burnett to do a show that they had entitled The Apprentice. Now, I had an agent, a big, big, big agent, and he was a great agent. But I shook Mark Burnett's hand, and NBC was dying to do it. And they said, we'd only do it if you do it, Trump. You're the only one we want. Nobody else. So I was honored, and I said, you know, okay, I'm going to do it. I knew nothing about television. Nothing. So my agent calls me. I heard you accepted doing The Apprentice. I won't let you do it. I said, you're fired. He's worse than me. I did say that, but I waited a little while. Okay, you're tough. So Jim said, Donald, in the history of television, there's never been a primetime show about business or what you're trying to do that succeeded. I said, I wish you told me that. Then he said, and only 3% of the shows that go on television make it. So in other words, you're probably going to have a failure anyway, but you'll definitely have a failure. I'm your agent. I do not want you to do this show. So I said, you know, Jim, I have a problem. I shook the hand of NBC, and I shook the hand of Mark Burnett, who also is known for having done The Survivor, which is another great one. I think Apprentice is better, but these are minor details. I said, I shook the hand. He said, doesn't matter. You can't do it. I said, I have to do it. Anyway, time goes by. We do the show. It goes on. It starts at number 10. It goes to 8. It goes to 5 and 4. It then goes to number 2. And the following week, it's the number one show on television. And I knew it was good because I didn't know what the word rating meant. I didn't know, is that good or bad? But I knew it was good because the chairman of NBC called me. It was my birthday. And it was 7 in the morning. And he called. He said, Donald, I just wanted to wish you a happy birthday. Now, to me, as an instinctive businessman, that means we're doing okay, right? My wife said, who was that? I said, that was the chairman of NBC. He wanted to wish me a happy. She said, darling, it's like 6:30 in the morning. So we went out, and I get a call from the agent. And he calls me also. But his call was like at 8. He said, Donald, congratulations. I'd like to see you. I said, Jim, what do you want to see me about? He said, well, your show just hit number one, and if you don't mind, I think I'm entitled to a very substantial commission. Oh, he's worse than a real estate broker, Jerry. So I said, how much do you think you're entitled to? Well, how about $2 or $3 million? I said, Jim, you're fired. And that was it. That was it. But remember this. Okay, the story is long, but the point is, number one, I shook hands. I want to honor my handshake. I would have, had I not shaken hand, I would have really listened to Jim. So that's important. Number two is, sometimes in life to be successful, oftentimes, most of the time, you have to follow your instincts. You have to follow your gut. You have to. Your parents may say wrong. Your whoever may say wrong. But you have to do it. Now, speaking of that, you've got to love what you do. And I've seen so many instances where people with great talent went into things that they didn't love. and they failed. I've seen other instances where people with far less talent. I went to the Wharton School of Finance. I used to say until coming here, it's the greatest school in the world, the greatest business school in the world. I may have to revise my speeches to put it at number two. Soon I probably will. The way you're going, I think I'm going to have to do that pretty soon. But I would always say to people, and I'd see people, and I'd say, you got to love what you do. Because, you know, if you love what you do, you work harder. But it's not work. I just bought Doral. I was telling Jerry, I just bought Doral. 800 acres in the middle of Miami. Gorgeous. I'm so excited. I want to fix it up. It's sort of not so nice now. It's got the big tournament. It's got everything. But it was run by Wall Street people. Wall Street people aren't good for fixing things. They're good for moving paper. That's not good. That's not what we want in the country. I want to do sort of a version of what you did here. But I have many, many jobs like that. I love taking things and fixing. Taking things and building. I love building. I almost like fixing better because if you're smart, if you're really smart, you can save a lot of money when the building is there. The foundations are built. The steel is up. The walls are up. And then, you know, you have people say renovation costs you more money. Those are people that aren't smart people. I know that for a fact you renovated a couple of buildings here and did very well that you could never, ever do if you had to build new. If you build new, I love that too. I do it both ways. But there's something great about the renovation project. So, you've got to love what you do. You've got to work hard. Never, ever quit. Never, ever give up. Because that's the other thing. I've seen people that are super genius, but they don't have that gut feeling. They don't have that stick-to-itiveness, that never quit. And I've seen people that almost made it and failed because they couldn't go that extra mile. They couldn't do it. So you get something, you never, ever quit, never, ever give up. You know, there's another one. I was coming down, and I just wrote it, and I've very rarely spoken about it. And frankly, I don't like to talk in the negative, but sometimes people are better off knowing the facts. Should I tell you what it is or not? Yes. I had a feeling you were going to say. You know, when people ask me about success, I've just started thinking about it over the last couple of years because I've seen a lot of it. You have to have an ability to handle pressure because you, no matter how successful you are, I have many, many friends and enemies, a lot of enemies too, I don't care, but they're smart. I have a lot of enemies and I've watched people and I've seen it. And people that can handle pressure, can be entrepreneurs, can be successful. Now, I have some friends that are really, really smart, but they can't handle pressure. In which case, they should work for somebody, do great, and have a good life. There's nothing wrong with it. Because I almost think that's an instinctive thing, the ability to handle pressure. Now, one of the things I tell people about pressure is, you know what? They said, how do you handle pressure? Who's had more pressure than me? Ay, ay, ay. Have I had pressure over the years? And, you know, I mean, I get criticized in my hair, but it's not so bad. And it's real. It's mine. You know it is my real hair. I mean, I get killed. I had an article recently that was so good. It was such a great article. And then I had one line. But he wears the worst hairpiece I've ever seen. I couldn't show the article to anybody, and it's not even true. But you have to have the ability to handle pressure. And if you can't handle pressure, you have to know that about yourself. You have to know that about yourself. So, handle pressure. If you can't, that's okay. But one of the things I tell people about handling pressure is, remember, because they ask me the question, how do you handle the stress? And, you know, somebody actually said, Donald, you're so handsome. Do you believe this? I love this person. You're so handsome. How have you stayed so handsome under all this pressure? And I actually thought of it to myself. You have to remember, it doesn't matter. God matters. Your family matters. It doesn't matter. And if you say it, I have some people, they say, I've got to be successful. I've got to be. They'll never be successful. It's too crazy. They can't think straight. Does that make sense? Does that make sense to you that was going crazy, standing up about your success? Right? So, you've got to handle it. Now he's a little bit more low-key. That's very good. I like that. We've calmed him down. So you've got to be able, to sort of say to yourself, nothing matters that much other than the real big deals with family, with your faith, etc. Okay. Always have passion. You've got to have passion for your family, for your life, for your church, for whatever it is. You've got to have that passion. You've got to just love it. Okay? Now, there are a couple of things that I give in speeches, and he's right. I get millions of dollars to speak. He gave me nothing. This guy's tough. I actually said, well, you know, through a representative, Mr. Trump gets millions of dollars to speak. And they looked at me like, excuse me, millions, forget it. You get nothing. I said, okay, but I'm a Presbyterian, so I'm going to be there. Because they won't even pay for my plane fare. You know that? Not even my plane. But honestly, I have to tell you, I love you too. Well, that's a male that said that. That was a male that said, but I love him too. Okay. But you know, I really wanted to be here because I've heard so much about Liberty University, especially being Presbyterian, being a Christian and a very proud Christian. And a real Christian. People are going to say, gee, I wonder what he meant by that. But I've heard so much about Liberty University and the job that's been done that this was really, really my honor. I always finish off by saying two things. But I'm not going to say them to you because you people don't have this problem. One is in business, get even. If somebody hurts you, and I use a much different word in other speeches than I do, but I won't use it. Because Becky said, please don't use bad language, said I miss it. So I'm not going to use it. So I'm going to say, should I use it? No, I won't use it. I promised. You know, I did it in front of a rough, rough group of Teamsters in Las Vegas. They were great. And I did it, and I used some really foul language. I got killed by that language because that was broadcast all over the place. But I wouldn't do it. But I always say, don't let people take advantage. This goes for a country, too, by the way. Don't let people take advantage. Get even. And, you know, if nothing else, other people will see that. And they're going to say, you know, I'm going to let Jim Smith or Sarah Malone, I'm going to let them alone because they're tough customers. So I always say it. But I won't say it to you. Because this is a different audience. You don't want to get even, do you? Yeah, I think you do. Okay. The other thing I tell people, because in New York it's like a total catastrophe, it's an epidemic, I always say, always have a prenuptial agreement, but I won't say it here because you people don't get divorced, right? Nobody gets divorced. Okay, so I will not say, have a prenuptial agreement to anybody in this room. I just want to end. Who else would say that but Trump, right? See? I said, I should say it, but I won't say it. How do I get my point across without saying it? I just did it, right? But to be a winner, and you're all winners, you've got to think like a winner. And you are just thinking like a lot of beautiful winners. And I love you all.
That's the conclusion of President Trump's speech. Thank you for listening.